Welcome to Watch Out, where we dig through our DVD dungeon, where we scour the endless streaming landscape, all to help you find some kick-ass horror movies. Hello and welcome to Watch Out, the horror movie review podcast. We're glad to have you with us. Our goal is to provide you with spoiler-free reviews and recommendations for both recent films and horror classics. I am Jason the Terrible, broadcasting from Ottawa, Ontario, and I am joined from Vancouver, BC, as always, by Grave Robber Jeff.
Hey, Chief, let's chat. Why not?
I can't remember where that's from. And Slice and Dice and Dave.
I guess it was from the movie Major League. Is that right?
Major League.
You know what's really weird that you mentioned that? I just bought the Blu-ray of Major League today.
Oh, what the hell? Jeez, man. You buy a lot of goddamn Blu-rays. Hello, everybody. This is Slice and Dice and Dave. Welcome.
Grave Robber Jeff, what was that quote from? I'm dying to know.
It was from The Simpsons, and I think I screwed it up.
Oh, well, maybe that's what.
For God's sakes, man.
Because when Homer calls the Mr. Sparkle company to complain about his picture being on the box... That's what the guy who answers the phone said. He's
okay,
like,
my mind is being blown.
Let's talk. Why not? Yeah. Anyways, never mind.
My mind is being blown right now because guess what the last episode of The Simpsons was that I watched with my kids last week?
Mr. Sparkle?
Mr. Goddamn Sparkle.
Well, how'd you not remember that?
Well, maybe you screwed it up, but no, I didn't. But that's why it sounded familiar. Lord, this... Is the Matrix happening right now? Dave mentioned Major League, and you mentioned the episode of The Simpsons I last watched, and holy crap.
Hey, speaking of The Simpsons, they just got renewed to 2025, which they'll pass episode 800 in that time frame. 800 ass-sucking episodes of The Simpsons, guys. Can you believe that?
And you know what's crazy is I own less than half of the seasons, and I own 13 seasons. On DVD.
Well, the problem was I was buying all the seasons, and then I said, "Oh, I'm just going to wait until it's over, and then I'm going to buy the whole goddamn
yeah,
pack."
Yeah, exactly.
And it hasn't ended. And now they've put them on Disney Plus, so I'm just like, "Well, I'll just watch them on Disney Plus for now."
Yeah. Simpsons is not a horror movie, so maybe we should move on to talk about what we'll be talking about in this episode.
Hey, has anybody been watching any horror movies these days?
Well, I've been buying them a lot.
I'll get out of time.
Today I bought It and It Chapter 2 at Sunrise Records.
Oh, that's a great record store.
Yeah, It I bought for $6 Canadian. And It Chapter 2 for $12 Canadian. Compare that to Amazon. Screw you, Amazon. Actually, I like Amazon. Never mind. I was surprised that there would be such a deal.
Jeff Bezos is going to have you silenced one way or the other there, Jason the Terrible. After saying
Hey, we can use the publicity.
Please silence us, Jeff Bezos. You know what I'm saying? And we were never heard from again.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we'll be talking about. In this episode, we are going to feature a mini review theme chosen by Slice and Dice and Dave.
I said, you know what? There's a lot of people in the world. There's a lot of genders and sexes in the world and stuff. Let's glorify the women directors. I said, let's watch a horror movie directed by a woman.
Nice choice. There are certainly a lot of good options out there, so I enjoy...
There is a hell of a lot, isn't there? I was like, oh, there can't be that many. There is a hell of a lot, which is wonderful.
And for our feature review, Grave Robber Jeff has been wanting to talk about this movie for almost as long as we've had this podcast, but it hasn't been on Shudder Canada until relatively recently. So, Grave Robber Jeff, what movie did you pick for our feature review this time?
So, I was kicking the can around back in the early days, drumming up ideas for movies, and this one showed up a lot. But like you say, wasn't in Canada on Shudder yet. Anything for Jackson.
Anything for Jackson. Ironically... A Canadian film that wasn't on Canadian Shudder, so maybe that's why it wasn't on Canadian Shudder.
Now what a horrible world we live in when that kind of thing happens, eh?
Yeah, well, and let's use this opportunity to give a shout out. I know this is late For those that were affected by the cost cutting at AMC and Shudder specifically, and who have lost their jobs as part of the downsizing there, we certainly feel for you. We've really enjoyed the Shudder service. We really enjoy all the effort that everybody there puts into it. That news hit me particularly hard. So I hope everybody has the opportunity to land on their feet. And as a horror podcast that often uses Shudder as a horror streaming service, just wanted to add our voices to the support out there that I have seen for all those people that were affected by this. Hope, like I say, hope you land on your feet and better days ahead. All right. Shall we get into our mini reviews, gentlemen? Grave Robber Jeff, since you picked the feature, you know what that means.
What?
It means you get to do your mini review first.
Oh, that's right.
Grave Robber Jeff's Fresh Dig.
So I did my regular thing of looking up lists on the internet, and there was quite a few. What's that site with all the Rotten Tomatoes ratings?
RottenTomatoes.com.
Yeah, that's the one. They even had their top 50 list or something. I'm like, 50? Wow, that's a lot. So I went and found smaller lists. But this one is the was on a few of the lists. I had never seen it. It kind of sounded like stuff I've watched before. It's 2014's A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. All right, written and directed by Anna Lily Amirpour. There's a few definitely interesting things about this movie. The common theme is it's a vampire movie. We talked about a vampire movie last time, Near Dark, right?
Yes.
We even had a vampire mini review 1 week.
The Lost Boys.
Yeah, there's been a lot of vampire talk lately, so I was a bit hesitant, but I was like, it kind of looks neat. The interesting thing about this one is it takes place in Iran. And so the whole thing is in Farsi, which is the Persian language. So it's all subtitled. And the other thing that's very interesting is it's black and white.
Huh.
And I might as well do a synopsis. I hardly ever do synopsises. So in the Iranian ghost town, Bad City, a place that reeks of death and loneliness, the townspeople are unaware they are being stalked by a lonesome vampire. So black and white, subtitled, Middle Eastern. You can definitely feel the cultural difference that from the North American movies in pretty much all aspects, like from the soundtrack and, of course, the language. So the story revolves around a handful of people in this ghost town that seems to be like an oil town, which I guess is very popular over the Middle East as the primary source of money for a lot of states. There's not a lot of people left here. It looks run down and terrible. There's a ditch with a bunch of bodies in it, so just not a good place to be. It revolves around young Arash, who is played by Arash Mirandi, who lives with his father, Hussein. Oh, and as part of the thing, the credits give each of the characters kind of a nickname. So for Hussein, he gets the Junkie, which references the fact that he is addicted to drugs, which is not the best situation for Arash to be living with, of course. And right at the start, they're talking to each other. Unfortunately, there's a guy nicknamed the Pimp.
Yeah.
His actual name is Saeed, who's trying to collect the money that the dad owes, but there's just no money. And Arash had just recently got a brand spanking new car that looked very fancy compared to everything else in the movie. So the Pimp decides, hey, I'm going to take your car, and so then I won't kill your dad or whatever. So it doesn't start off very pleasant, we can say that. And that's kind of the theme of the whole thing, is a bunch of just very melancholy scenes with a lot of sadness and loneliness and isolation type stuff. So those are the three characters you get exposed to pretty quick. But the main character that you need to know about is the girl, played by Sheila Vant. I think all the guys were born in Iran, so they're all Persian actors, but the girls were all born in L.A. But I think they have ties to the same background. Anyway, Sheila Van plays the girl who is the vampire's, like, floating around. The vampire reveal is really cool, actually, I thought, the way they did it. But the most of the story is between when Arash ends up meeting the girl and she doesn't kill him, which kind of like has a, it's kind of like Near Dark in a way, where the guy meets the vampire and she decides not to kill him because she likes him kind of thing. And so most of the rest of the movie is kind of about their relationship in and amongst the breakdown of the other relationships of the characters. So what makes this movie good? Well, definitely the cinematography and all like the feel of it, the shots and the scenes and the use of music and all that stuff comes together very well indeed. What kind of lacks is, well, it depends what you're looking for. One reviewer I saw kind of put it in a good way. He says, "This moody and gorgeous film is finally more about atmosphere and emotions than the narrative." And that is very true, because it's kind of like a snapshot in these people's lives. And you don't really get history on any of them. So depending on what kind of movie watcher you are, I tend to like want to know the background stuff. So it's just a bit frustrating on that end for me. But the visual spectacle of it all is very neat and very well done. Particular scenes that were shot for like emotional impact and not necessarily the story. That doesn't necessarily mean it's boring or anything like that. In fact, it's very visually stimulating in that way. The one that came immediately to mind as I was watching it, of course, is the old Let the Right One In and Let Me In universe of that type of vampire thing. So there's a very similar feel here. So if you like those two movies, there's probably a good chance you'll like these ones, even though the story is not as fleshed out as those other movies. But the critics rave about this movie. Whereas the Rotten Tomatoes, out of 135 critic reviews, 96% positive on Rotten Tomatoes. 10,000 audience ratings, 75% positive. That's a pretty high consensus for sure. And so if you're like one of those artistic types who like symbolism and moody scenes and just neat visuals, I think you'll really like it. I, unfortunately, am not the biggest... Like, I see that stuff, and I'm like, well, that's kind of cool, you know? Oh, yeah, that's all right. Yeah. But I need something behind it, you know, like a fleshed-out storyline and stuff. There was a bit too much left to the imagination for me. Other thing I'll mention before signing off, there happens to be a cat that makes an appearance that has got a lot of buzz from the reviewing community. And it wasn't even supposed to be in the movie, but the director liked the way that it acted so much that she made a little part for him in there. Once you get to the end of the scene, there's a scene there where, well, I can't spoil everything, but the cat makes an appearance in a very, very bizarre scene. So anyways, if you like cats, there's a cute cat in there doing its thing. So there's lots to like.
This is a horror movie podcast here, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't even a black cat. It was like, you know, one of those multicolored cats?
Calico cat?
Is that really what it is? Anyways, so to wrap up, it's critically acclaimed. It's almost 10 years old now. I watched it on Plex, which they have way more ads than Tubi does. So it kind of broke the mood a lot. So if you can watch it without the ads, much preferred.
So I had looked at this one as a possibility to watch as well, and you know why I didn't choose it?
Wow.
Why?
Because it was on Plex.
Yeah, it makes it kind of annoying. Just because their ads are longer, too. They're like 2.5 minutes.
This is what I'm saying.
Oh, my God.
I only watched the one movie on Plex, and I swore never again. Sorry, Plex, but good God.
So, yeah, hopefully all that made sense. And I guess I'll come in with the rating of, 6.8 out of 10.
Very specific. Now, is the director Iranian as well?
Well, she was born in L.A., but I think she had roots there that were the basis of the movie, but I can't confirm that at this point.
Thanks, Grave Robber Jeff.
Yes, thank you very much, Grave Robber Jeff. That is a movie I'd heard of for a while. Definitely happy to know more about it, so thank you. Now, join me down in my DVD dungeon? Yes, you can consider that the invitation.
Jason the Terrible's DVD Dungeon.
So in case you didn't get that, my movie that I picked is The Invitation from 2015.
Oh, I didn't get it. I thought you were inviting us down to your lair. And I said, there's no way in hell I'm going down to your DVD dungeon, you see.
Some invitations are just creepy and disturbing. And that's kind of what we're going to get into here. Directed by Karen Kusama. Who remembers what other movie that Slice and Dice and Dave loves that Karen Kusama directed?
Oh, God. I have no idea.
Well, let's put it this way. The Invitation was her first movie in 7 years since the release of Jennifer's Body.
Oh, you don't say. Isn't that interesting?
I do say. Cool. And so cool. I remember I watched Jennifer's Body not too long ago. Interesting little movie. I don't know if I'm as high on it as you are, Slyson.
Well, you're a goddamn weirdo, that's why, right?
But Karen Kusama, I think she's only done about 5 feature films. She's done another one since The Invitation, but The Invitation, like I said, was the first one in 7 years. It was funded by a consortium called Game Changer Films, which funds only films directed by women. So I thought that was kind of appropriate as well.
I guess so, yeah.
All right, so I'm going to give you the IMDb synopsis because it is very, very simple and straightforward and vague. When a man accepts an invitation to a dinner party hosted by his ex-wife, the unsettling past reopens old wounds and creates new tensions. Now, first, let me ask you guys, does that sound awkward at all to you, being invited to a dinner party with an ex-wife? I know neither of you have ex-wives, so just pretend.
It depends if I would be with another person or not. If I wasn't, then I'd be like, ah, sure, you know, why the hell not? If I was, then I would probably be like, oh, that's kind of weird. So, I mean, it depends.
Okay, well, guess
on
what?
On the circumstance. What's that?
Guess what? Logan Marshall Green plays Will, the ex-husband, and he brings his current girlfriend.
Oh.
And his current girlfriend is Kira, played by, okay, give me a second to figure this out, Emma Yahtzee. Corinaldi plays Kira. So Will and Kira are coming to this dinner party. The dinner party is hosted by Eden, the ex-wife, played by Tammy Blanchard, and her new boyfriend, David, played by, oh boy, Michiel Huseman. And they're also joined by a bunch of their old friends. Now, Eden and David have been off the grid for about 2 years. They went to Mexico. Because the other subtext here is that Will and Eden divorced in the wake of their son's death. And so there's a lot of grief that they have to work through here. And they both do it and have done it in very, very different ways. And that's part of the reason why it's been 2 years since we've seen Eden and David. Or since Will and his friends have seen Eden and David. And so this invitation comes as a bit of a surprise. Now, the question that this movie is asking the audience is, do you believe this invitation is a dangerous invitation? Or is it an invitation that is just being perceived as very weird and awkward and possibly sinister? And so I'm going to bring up a movie concept that I kind of like finding good examples of these movie concepts. I like to think of myself as trying to educate myself on film theory and film study and stuff like that. I know that may not always come through, but when I find an example like this, I like to talk about it. So there's a concept called the unreliable witness. And what Will is in this movie is an unreliable witness because he is the guy that we are seeing everything happen through his eyes. And he is so damn skeptical and suspicious because he still hasn't processed everything with his son having died. Like, he's now back in the same house that he used to live in with his ex-wife Eden and his son before all of that went down. So he is going through a lot at this dinner party. And so throughout the night, you know that he's not seeing straight and thinking straight. And you're seeing this twisted version of the night through his eyes. And so the brilliance of this movie is that you think you know where it's going, but all the way along, you're doubting yourself and you're seeing things proven and disproven. And it really takes you on a ride because really, if you've got a horror movie called The Invitation and you think things are going to be sinister, there's a good chance that that's the way it's going to turn out, but you don't know. And in this case, you don't know. So you end up being on the edge of your seat for most of the runtime of this movie, and all the way up until you get some answers, you just don't know. That's what makes this movie a lot of fun to watch. It keeps you very tense, and it plays with you. And like I said, I think it's a great example of that unreliable witness concept. So, yeah, I mean, what Eden and David have been up to for 2 years comes into this, and it just makes for the most awkward dinner party that you have ever seen. But is there more to it than that? You don't know. Yeah, this one was written by Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi. They are the team behind RIPD and Aeon Flux and Crazy Beautiful and Clash of the Titans. It premiered March 13th, 2015 at South by Southwest. I watched this one on Shudder. Amazingly enough, as early as 2012, it was announced that a few other big-name actors were going to be involved, and I'm not sure what happened, but Luke Wilson, Zachary Quinto, Topher Grace, and Johnny Galecki were all reportedly part of the cast at one point, and that sort of changed. So it ended up being a bunch of people that are not as familiar. Now, the character of Will, the main character of Will, is doing his best impression of Aquaman, Jason Momoa. He's got the whole movie, that it almost ruined it for me because he looks like goddamn Aquaman. He doesn't have the same big muscles and stuff, but he's got the facial hair and long hair going, and that's what he looked like for the entire movie. There is another one of the party guests named Pruitt, played by John Carroll Lynch, and this is the only guy that I really recognized. I couldn't figure out where it was until I really, really dug into his filmography. Now, so he's most commonly known for playing Norm in Fargo. He was in 72 episodes of The Drew Carey Show as Steve Carey. And he was in 4 seasons of the American Horror Story series. So, Dave, you're probably familiar with him, even if you don't know the name. You would probably know the face. But where I know him is from one episode of The Walking Dead where he played Eastman. That's what I figured out where I saw him before. Yes, lots of characters to keep track of in this movie, but that's not too bad. It's what really keeps you invested here is the central question of what's going on, and is it as bad as you think it is? I'm not going to say any more than that, because since that's the central question, I'm not going to get into anything else. I'm going to say you should absolutely see it. I mean, giving this one... What am I giving this one? I'm giving this one a 9 out of 10.
Whoa, pal.
And it's another one of those where I think it was really well done. The concept is really well done. I've seen reviews where it says, hey, it doesn't add anything new to the whole crazy dinner party genre. And for one thing, I didn't know there was a crazy dinner party genre. But I think it does add something new to that because it messes with you expertly. So the strength is definitely in the writing. As far as I'm concerned, I was pretty impressed by this one. So, The Invitation, 2015, 9 out of 10. Go watch it.
I guess I'm going to have to go watch it. Wouldn't you say there, Grave Robber?
It's on my list.
Fantastic. Well, anywho, gentlemen, it's funny you bring up Karen Kusama there, Jason the Terrible.
Is it funny?
Yeah, it is funny. Well, to me, probably not to anybody else, but I'm going to explain it anyway. Because you know how, like, I was in charge of picking the theme this week?
Yep.
Well, it's because I was on the old Internet Movie Database. I was completely wrong by saying Internet Movie Database. I was on the Instagram, you see. You guys know Instagram?
It's very different, but yes.
It is very different. It's on the Internet, though. They're both on the Internet.
But it's not but a anywho, movie database.
And they both start with I. Instagram, internet movie. So you can see my confusion.
Yep, I hear you.
But anyway, So I follow Barbara Crampton on there, and she's all like, hey, I don't know, she shared either a post or a reel or something, and it was of her congratulating a director that goes by the name of Roxanne Benjamin. And I said, Roxanne Benjamin? Pretty goddamn sure I worked with her before. And so I said, yep, I worked with her before. So then, hilariously enough, I looked into like the movies she's directed. And one of the movies was a compilation of four short segments called XX, where four deadly tales by four killer women. I was like, ooh, I'm going to watch that. And then I said, well, but I don't like doing the mini reviews on four different, you know what I'm saying? I'd rather just one chunky thing. You know, because I did that Chillerama and everybody got super bored at my 45-minute long mini review or whatever it was. I digress. Anyway, Roxanne Benjamin did one of the segments, and so did Karen Kusama. Isn't that something?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so there you go. But because of that, I picked the theme, a film directed by a woman, as they call them.
Slice and dice and Dave, scream and stream saga.
I picked a movie from 2022. That's pretty recent, isn't it? It's on Shudder. As a matter of fact, it's a goddamn Shudder original, apparently. Directed by a gal named Rebecca McKendry. We're talking about, like I say, from 2022, Glorious.
Awesome.
And now, I hadn't heard anything about it. But the thumbnail looked pretty cool. It had this guy in his undies with a severed leg in his hand. And there's like, you know, like in those movies with monsters and tentacles and stuff. There's some of those around there.
When I hear Glorious, I first think of a guy in his undies holding a severed leg.
Absolutely. And that's what you're going to get, pal. All right. That's what you're going to get. Another nice thing was it was only an hour and 19 minutes. But that's not why I picked it. I picked it because I watched the trailer. The trailer was something else. I said, that sounds like a ridiculous movie. And I said, well, that means I just have to watch it. Let me tell you what the Internet Movie Database says in a short synopsis. After a breakup, Wes ends up at a remote rest stop. He finds himself locked inside a bathroom with a mysterious figure speaking from an adjacent stall. Soon, Wes realizes he is involved in a situation more terrible than he could imagine. That's right. Basically, the whole movie, he's stuck in a bathroom. Well, how could that be any good? Well, it is. He's in a bad state because he's sad. He's dealing with this breakup with his gal Friday. What was her name? Brenda, played by Sylvia Grace Crim. You see her here and there in flashbacks and things. And then the main guy, Wes, is played by Ryan Kwanten. And yeah, so he gets there and then he's all like, yeah, I'm feeling upset. And he drinks himself stupid, and then he wakes up and he's got a Ralph, so he runs out into the old bathroom, and then he's locked in there and has a big conversation with some weirdo in the stall next to him. But we all know that's not just any weirdo. It's some sort of godly creature played by J.K. Simmons. Now, how do we say his name?
Really?
Yeah, do you know who J.K. Simmons is?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. He's in a lot of goddamn shows.
We were just talking about him last episode because he was he was in Whiplash, and I was trying to tell you guys how cool Whiplash was.
Oh yeah.
And he was in
Jennifer's Bodies. Yeah, Jennifer's Body too. Yeah. Anyway, he's in a goddamn, how can I say this? Shitload of movies. But he's the voice in the stall next door. Now, he explains how to say his name. How can I do this? I'll hold my tongue like this. Gathanofla. I can't remember how the hell he says his name. But he explains how to say his name. So if you're very interested, you can watch the movie. Anyway, there's a glory hole. And it's got this monster, and then like the hole is in the mouth type thing. And basically,
hey, maybe you can explain to our listeners what a glory hole is exactly there, Slice and Dice and Dave.
Well, you know what? I never really knew until I started listening to a band named Steel Panther. They have a song called Glory Hole, and it's about sticking your into the hole and, you know what I'm saying? And then things.
Is that where you want me to put sound effects in? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes. But anyway, so I'll be damned. Now, I've never used one of those before because it sounds absolutely terrible. But they're out there. You know what? I guess if you're a big time trucker and you're, you know, you don't have a gal at home, and there's this service, these services walking around with holes, and then it says like, be here at 5 p.m. I guess I could see the use of them, glory holes, you know. But anyway, so get this, this friggin' creature says, hey, you gotta satisfy me. That's the only way to save the world. And then it just gets crazy from there, fellas. Oh, yeah. Would you satisfy this demigod in order to save the world? Ha! Well, Wes is stuck in this predicament. That's right. It's kind of a comedy horror film. At times, it is kind of dark, though, and horror-like. And gory. There's blood. There's some deaths. A little upsetting at times. By watching the trailer, I said, well, I kind of have to watch it. And I'm kind of glad I did. I think it was a pretty decent entry into the horror movie category. Like I say, directed by Rebecca McKendry. It's nicely lit, too. Good job on... Because, you know me, my pinks and greens and stuff. There's a lot of that kind of stuff going on in there. And it doesn't get boring, and it's not super long. And I thought there's a couple twists and turns in there, and I thought they were pretty good. I didn't think what was going to happen happened. But it did. So it's pretty cool. I gave it a fat 6 out of 10. Someday down the road, maybe I'd watch it again. Glorious. From 2022.
Nice. Interesting.
You can watch it on Shudder.
Interesting suggestion there, Slyson. I know Rebecca McKendry from her time at Fangoria magazine. I think she's been a contributor there for many
years. Oh, yeah. And she does podcasts and stuff, so she's a... She's a pretty cool gal, it sounds like. You know what I'm saying?
Is this her first? There you go. This isn't her first movie, though, is it? Do you know?
No, I don't believe so. Let me just quickly confirm that, fellas. Oh, wow. Known for this. Known for that. 10 directors, but I think there's a lot of short films here. Ooh, she did one called Psycho Granny in 2019. All the Creatures Were Stirring. And then a bunch of short films. So she's done a couple. I'm not sure where you'd be able to watch them. Although I like the name Psycho Granny. Ooh, All the Creatures Were Stirring. Looks like a Christmassy one. But anyway, so there you go. She's done a couple other things. Any questions on Glorious? See, that's the thing. Like, I think we owe it to the world to watch some movies that aren't quite as well known and tell you if they're worth watching. I can't tell you if this one's worth watching or not.
Well, you're supposed to tell us if it's worth watching.
I did. I enjoyed it.
What did you rate it?
You know what I'm saying? A 6 out of 10, fellas. I didn't mind it. I thought it was pretty good.
Thank you, Slice and Dice and Dave. That was a glorious review. All right, let's get into our feature presentation, everybody, where we do anything for Jackson.
And now watch out for our feature presentation.
A bereaved Satanist couple kidnaps a pregnant woman so they can use an ancient spellbook to put their dead grandson's spirit into her unborn child, but end up summoning more than they bargained for. Shall we go to our individual rating segments, gentlemen? Because that's the whole story.
Thank God for synopsi, eh? There you go.
Well, you got to imagine that I think the story here was that they pitched this and sold it in 5 minutes and started filming the next day. Like, it's a pretty interesting pitch.
Huh.
So I think that's what I read a year ago and said, wow, that sounds like quite a movie.
Yeah. And do you know what's really bizarre? The director was known for MOW Christmas movies. You know all those Christmas movies that come out at Christmas time on Hallmark Channel and all those?
And what's the director's name there, Slyson?
Justin G. Dick.
I just wanted you to be the one to say it.
No, but the thing is, like, I've worked on a couple of those movies. Oh, God, they're horrible. I hate them so much.
What but, did you say, M-O-W? You know, what is M-O-W?
Yeah, movie M-O-Dubs. Yeah, friggin' rights movie of the week. Now, the cool thing is, though, I got to work with What's-Her-Face, Carrie Fisher, on one. So, at least I got that for working on one of those movies. Anyway, so it's really cool that he made a cool horror movie, is all I'm trying to say.
Anything for Jackson was written by Keith Cooper, and it debuted at the Fantasia Film Festival on September 1st, 2020. Fantasia Film Festival, of course, is Canada's own horror and genre film festival that takes place in Montreal. Ooh. I haven't been there yet. I would like to. Sounds like it would be a gay old time.
Hey, maybe we should make a trip of it someday, everybody. That'd be pretty sick.
That wouldn't be
a bad
idea.
Let's go watch a bunch of horror movies in Montreal. Montreal's a sick place to visit.
I mean, they also have the Toronto Film Festival in Toronto, which is not horror movies specifically.
It's not all horrors. No. Yeah, come on now, Jesus.
But anyway, so this is a very Canadian production. It was, do you know where it was shot?
Barrie, Ontario.
Relatively close to where I am compared to other places in the world. And stars a lot of Canadian actors. In fact, it's almost exclusively Canadian actors.
Well, you got the old grandma, Audrey, played by Sheila McCarthy. You guys might know Sheila McCarthy from such shows as...
Little Mosque on the Prairie.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I think she's been in a lot of stuff over her career.
Yeah, she's been in a hell of a lot of stuff. We'll just say that.
We can say that, and I think you can say the same thing about Julian Richings, who plays her husband, Henry.
Henry, well, yeah, like he's been in a hell of a lot of things, too. For instance, he's been in, oh, God, he was in Urban Legend. He was the weird janitor. Sick.
Yeah, he's actually credited as Weird Janitor. Like,
don't get out of town.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's been in a ton of stuff, eh?
And the strength of this movie really lies on not only the acting chops of these two, but the relationship between them. When you hear the synopsis, you're thinking, okay, this old couple must be very sinister to pull off something like this and kidnap a pregnant woman and try to summon the dead spirit of their grandchild in a reverse exorcism as a Satanist couple, and oh my God, they must be terrible. But they're actually really sweet.
Yeah, they appear that way, but they're very terrible people.
Yeah, but like, okay, let's dig into that, Grave Robber. Are they really terrible people?
Yes.
Did you not find yourself thinking about it as they're going through their justifications and think, well, okay, I could sort of see that, no?
Well, if they didn't join that Satanist cult at the library, they just seemed like maybe they were trying to do something, but it was for their own like selfish reasons, you know,
to make a deal with the devil to bring your goddamn grandson back and some other person's baby.
The main point of this movie is that grief will drive you to extreme lengths, and that's definitely what's happened here. Because what I wasn't sure about is, were they Satanists before this happened? Or did they become Satanists just to bring him back?
I feel they became Satanists. That's why they... I don't know. That's the feel I got. Because the first little bit is kind of a little goofy, even though you're kind of dealing with a serious subject matter. Don't you find, like, the way they're acting and stuff? So I feel like it's kind of new to that. Like, they haven't done anything like that before, right?
They're very nonchalant about everything, which gives it a different feel. But is it the grief that's making them act that way, or are they just sociopaths?
That's a good question, man.
For me, they were acting like any grandparents would. I mean, not exactly, but I'm going to come back to this point later. But this is a movie about what would happen if anybody's grandparents tried to do this, I think.
But that's the thing, because like I was saying, people are way too selfish, man. You gotta say, like, I guess that was just the time, unfortunately, of poor little Jackson guy to go. So why would you friggin' have to take it from someone else's baby, you friggin' selfish jerks? Go F yourselves. That's what I gotta say to them.
So the scene of the abduction is really kind of tells you what kind of movie we're going to be dealing with here, because this movie is walking a fine line of veering into horror comedy. It's not horror comedy, but it's a darkly comic horror movie, if that makes sense.
It's funny because I never saw the trailer, as I rarely do. So the abduction scene, all that sort of stuff, seems more like pretty standard, just people being bad to other people. But eventually, when it gets to all the satanic stuff, it goes in a direction that I was not expecting. Although I imagine people who saw the trailer probably knew what was going to happen.
So that's a good point. I haven't seen the trailer either. Did you watch it after that?
I did not.
So you're just assuming that the trailer goes in those directions?
Well, I'm assuming that the trailer shows the ghosts and stuff.
All right. Well, yes. When you talk about your synopsis and it says, what did it say at the end of the synopsis? Things don't go as planned as what usually happens in horror movies.
They end up summoning more than they bargained for.
Yes. So
yeah, I wasn't expecting that. It was kind of cool, actually. I'd say the first 20 minutes was kind of whatever. But then as soon as like some of that kind of stuff happens, I was like, hey, this is pretty cool, actually.
So I had my expectations raised up quite a bit because I read a written review by Wolfman Josh from Horror Movie Podcast on Letterboxd. And he had a lot of very strong things to say about this. And I was reading it because I was trying to decide if it was something that a non-horror fan could watch. And generally that consensus is no. I think my expectations were raised a little bit too high when it comes to that because it was scary from a ghost perspective. There are definitely scary ghosts in this movie, and the undertones of all the Satanism and everything makes for a very creepy and scary movie. But it wasn't anything that I hadn't really seen before when you think about it. Like the uniqueness of the story is something I haven't heard before, but what actually happens throughout the movie is not particularly... There was nothing that really scared me. What do you think? I know we're getting ahead of ourselves into the scary meter, but in general, how do you feel about this movie?
I think it was a little spookier than normal, to be fair with you. But here goes my old... Here's Slice and Dice and Dave with his name dropping again. I worked with one of the ghosts, and he's the nicest guy in the goddamn world. And he did that exact same thing where he goes like, you know, he contorts and goes backwards and then jumps at you. He did that to me in real life. And it was scary. And it was awesome. So now that when I see it in a movie, it obviously doesn't have the same effect to me. But God, he's awesome. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. What's his name? Troy James or something, isn't it? The contortion guy from America's Got Talent. Super nice guy too, so I can't be scared of him. He's the best. But anyway, that's my name dropping. But then there's other ghosts. I don't know, man. Like I thought some of it was pretty... I wasn't expecting it, I'll tell you that much.
This is what I was getting at with the fact that this could be anybody's grandparents. When they end up summoning more than they bargained for, it's just like, well, these guys are so cute and sweet and naive that when they're trying to do evil to bring their grandson back, they don't get it quite right. That's the fun of this movie, is that they're not very good at it. You get to witness exactly what that means. Now, we haven't talked about the kidnapped woman yet, played by Constantina Mantelos. Well, let's just put it this way. This is not her movie. That's my statement. What do you guys think?
Yes, I agree.
Like, she doesn't have much to do. And as an audience, we're not really invested in her because we're kind of seeing the movie through the grandparents' eyes, right?
Yeah, it's definitely shown from the grandparents' point of view.
I became invested in her. So it took a while, but I did become invested in her. And I was rooting for her by maybe halfway through or something like that. But it did take a while. I agree with you there.
But were you really rooting for... She's billed as Becker in the credits. That's her last name.
Yes.
Yes. Well, like they set her up as a... You know, the father's not in the picture, and she's kind of like an ideal target, right? And that's what I was getting at before, is that they kind of made choices to minimize the amount of damage they would do while they're doing this, and they're trying to be very nice to her and keep her safe and keep her baby safe and everything, and it just goes against... It contrasts with the fact that they've kidnapped her, and they're trying to do this. So... Mixed messages, and as a viewer, I was conflicted into how I was supposed to feel while I was watching this.
So you were on the grandparents' side?
No, I was conflicted. All I'm trying to say is that there were elements of the grandparents' characters that you could sympathize with, which is a pretty good trick to play when you're when you start sympathizing with Satanists. I don't know what that says about me.
Yeah, no, I can see that that's probably what they were trying to do, but I tell you, it didn't work on me because, you know, I care about other human beings. You know what I'm saying? I'm really trying to drive that home.
All right.
There's no way in hell you should be going for the grandparents in this one.
But then it's an interesting storytelling choice that I don't know if I can think of another movie that follows the antagonists so closely. Like, it's a it's bold funny, choice. It's like,
I don't know if you guys have seen Breaking Bad. Have you seen Breaking Bad?
I haven't watched it yet.
I'm going to be made so much fun of I haven't watched it yet either.
It's a very similar thing they do with that show, which is one of the most popular shows of all time, where you have a protagonist that is doing awful things that you can't tell if you should be cheering for him or not. So it kind of has a bit of a overlay with this one. I think people enjoy that too, that it gives them a bit more of an experience.
The moral ambiguity.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even really moral ambiguity because it's obviously wrong what they're doing. Okay, well, let's put it this way. If you are against the grandparents, then you must be rooting for what happens to them. Once they summon more than they bargained for, then you must get some kind of glee out of what results from that.
Nope. I didn't get any glee, Jay.
So did you find enjoyment in watching this, and where did it come from?
I did find enjoyment. I was just interested to see how everything was going to turn out. I was invested in the process, Jason.
Yeah, that works.
So there you go.
Just structured differently than most movies.
Yeah, so this is like, so basically they're trying to do a reverse exorcism. Isn't that what that the case kind of? Something
that's,
like
that's
that?
That's what they call it, yep.
No, there's some funny moments in that movie, this movie, you know, like the guy that just refuses to not snowplow their driveway, you know what I'm saying? I thought that was awesome.
Played by Yannick Bisson, who is Detective William Murdoch in the Murdoch Mysteries series.
Yeah, you're damn right he is.
And then, yeah, getting back to that Satanist cult that just happens to meet at a library or a community center and brings, like, snacks and stuff. And the one guy that takes it really seriously is Ian, played by Josh Crudas, who was just in Welcome to Raccoon City. Plays a very convincing, frustrated Satanist with the mother of all comb-overs.
Yeah, good point.
Oh, he is one of the ones that I was like, not... Oh, I can't say that because I can't no. say...
Yeah, he was kind of annoying, that guy. I didn't care for him. Oh, you know what I liked about this movie? There's the lady that just flossed her teeth, you know? Just went to town flossing her teeth. I think you'll know what I'm talking about if you watch this movie. Am I right?
Yeah, well, I was remembering back to when we were reviewing Sick Nurses and how there was the mother of all toothbrushing scenes.
Oh, yeah. This is the mother of all flossing your teeth scenes.
Yeah, well, I thought we were going to have another toothbrushing scene, but no, it turned out to be a flossing scene.
And it was sick.
It was pretty effective. Actually, so I was getting complete Sixth Sense vibes here. not from any story points or plot twists, but just the concept of having these ghosts kind of hanging out.
I got, you know what I got? I got 13 ghost feels.
Yeah. Well, and supposedly the director said they put in 3 hidden ghosts that you're supposed to try to find by watching really closely.
Oh, man. Why didn't I read that before I watched it? Now I got to watch it again at some point in life.
But I think people have been trying to find that in the trivia track on IMDb. But go ahead, Grey Rubber.
I was just like, maybe we shouldn't call them ghosts. We should call them tortured souls.
Oh, yeah.
I guess.
Just like Beetlejuice, right?
Yeah, but anyways, the first appearance of a tortured soul, that's when things flip and you realize that it's not just a run-of-the-mill kidnapping movie.
I guess this one, in retrospect, is a fairly straightforward concept, right? Like, as you said, Grave Robber, you read the synopsis and you feel like you want to go straight to the rating segment. So, should we go straight to the rating segment?
I guess, eh? Like,
let's do that. Let's move on to our individual ratings.
Oh, fantastic.
And Slice and Dice and Dave, why don't we start with the scary meter?
Yeah, hey, I was sitting there watching this. Now, oh, you know what I forgot to say? I think it's important to explain to the people how we watched these movies.
Sure.
Because it really makes a difference. So now I watched this movie this morning, so it was super bright outside. But I'm not even gonna lie. I had headphones on, and I put a black T-shirt over my head and phone, and I was lying down, and I was using my phone, so it was all like compact, but it was dark because I was under a T-shirt. And yes, I sat there for an hour and a half watching a horror movie. So that's how I did it.
When you say it's really important to show to tell people how you watched it, you're not fooling around here, because no one else watches it the way you watch it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it really makes a difference. Like, if you're watching this movie friggin' in the daytime and the brightness, and you can, and there's nothing but like reflections on your TV, and your kids are running around downstairs, and you can barely hear it, then you're not gonna enjoy it as much. You know what I'm saying? So I like to let you know how I watched the movie. Like, say I give it a shitty rating, like 3 out of 10. Well, maybe it's because I watched it with a T-shirt over my head. You know what I'm saying? Or if I gave it an awesome rating because I had a bunch of drugs or something. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, I was lying in bed with a T-shirt over my head watching it on the phone and a set of headphones. So, but let me get to the scary rating here. It was kind of scary, this one. Like, out of all the movies we've been watching where I'm all like, yeah, nothing's really scary these days, this one I would say, like, I'm going to give it like a 5 out of 10. I thought it had its charm, right? I wasn't really expecting everything that happened, so I was like, ah.
All right, how about you, Grey Rubber? Did you watch it with a T-shirt over your head, too?
No, no, no.
You guys got to learn to live a little here, guys. Jeez.
But I agree, they're definitely scarier than average, I suppose. Particularly sometimes where they did different views. Like, I don't know if you remember when they... Well, how much can we talk about this? But there's a scene where the camera's, like, coming out of the pregnant lady's eyes, so you're seeing what she sees. And I thought that was very well done and creepy. And a couple of the ghost scenes, tortured soul scenes, were definitely on the scarier side. So I'd even go for a 6 on that one, 6 out of 10.
Yeah, right on, Grave Robin Jeff. Jason the Terrible.
Well, let's revisit the genres that scare me the most. Home invasions are right up there. And haunted houses and ghosts are way up there. So I would say this is sort of a home invasion by ghosts or tortured souls.
Wow.
It hits a couple of strong points for me. That said, I'm not going to bump it way up, but I'm going to give it like a 6.5 or a 7.
All right on.
It's not for the faint of heart. It does do a couple of them very well, and it's creepy and scary. So yes, absolutely. What do we move on to next? Are we Disturbometer time?
Well, I mean, the whole kind of idea of it's a little upsetting, you know? Disturbing. Not like super disturbing, though. Like, I'd say moderately disturbing. Nothing puts it over the top, you know what I'm saying?
Well, they're kidnapping a pregnant woman and trying to infuse the dead soul of their grandchild into her fetus.
Yeah, that's why I said moderately disturbing, you know? There weren't any, like, turtles being chopped up, you see? So it's not over-the-top disturbing.
I suppose that's going to be the benchmark from now on.
You're damn right.
I mean, maybe it's disturbing that I found ways to sympathize with these crazy people.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
What do you think, Grave Robber?
I think middle of the road, too. We didn't really say, but there are murders in here.
And, there's murders afoot?
And they happen to people in unexpected ways. And they kind of happen in a shocking manner, maybe more than a disturbing manner. But I think in general, like, it's, yeah, kind of like middle of the road, like you were saying.
You're damn right there, Grave Robber. Now, Jason, this is where I'm interested to see if you were super disturbed or not.
Not super disturbed, but middle of the road to slightly higher. There's some scenes that we can't talk about.
What?
Well, I'm just saying that there are some scenes that we have not talked about yet that amp up the disturbing part. So...
Oh, well, there you go.
middle of the road to slightly more disturbing than that. I think it does those particular parts of it very well. It's just that the rest of the movie balances on that satire horror comedy line. Maybe a bit too much to be truly scary.
Yeah.
And disturbing. Maybe that's it. It's too much of a horror comedy to be truly disturbing. Like, if you're not a horror fan, you're often not going to see the comedy in a horror comedy, and you're just going to see the disturbing part. And that's how some people will see this, too. Is that a segue into the hilarity rating, by any chance?
Yeah, I think so there, Jason the Terrible. You know what? Who wants to start off with the hilarity reading?
I will, for the first time ever.
Wow.
I'm going to say this is like a 6 out of 10, because the way the actors pulled it off and the writing and just the whole concept, it was infused with this dark humor. And it's not that you're laughing out loud at it, but the whole concept is so crazy and bumbling almost that absolutely, there is a lot of comedy in here.
Yeah. Well, I find it a little different than comedy. I just found it like light. How do you explain it? Like, I wasn't laughing, but I felt like it was a lightly toned feel, even though you're kind of dealing with bad stuff. Does that make sense?
On the same page.
Yeah, so, like, I wasn't sitting there giggling and laughing and stuff, but I was like, oh, yeah. It was a weird feeling, actually, you know what I'm saying? So, it was weird.
Were you oxygen deprived under your shirt by any chance?
No, I made sure that there was a direct airflow in and out. As I was inhaling and exhaling.
That's important. Grave Robber Jeff, did you laugh?
Is it more a satire than comedy?
I did use that word. That's a good question.
Because, I don't know, like, I never laughed, but still, like, the feel of it, how everybody's nonchalant with whatever they're doing, I can see how that makes it a bit different. But I wouldn't call it a funny movie. And I think you have to really be kind of sharp to catch all the nuances of what they're trying to do, which I am not sharp. So I'll come in with a lower rating on the hilarity. 2 out of 10 or something like that.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Okay. That's a big swing.
In my opinion, once they start doing the rituals and stuff, I didn't find anything really funny after that. So it's just like the first little chunk was a little airy-fairy. Is that what you say? Airy-fairy?
It's probably offensive to somebody.
Everything's offensive to somebody.
Because I can't say this for the audience, but the 2 out of 10 comes with the
spoiler.
It wasn't. I don't know how, if it was supposed to be funny, but every time it happened, like it was kind of getting ridiculous. But
I was seeing that as more disturbing.
Well, oh, yeah. The first time was super disturbing, but the 8th time was like, all right, enough.
I kind of liked that actually, but anyway. Now, is it considered an ass-sucking comedy, like a horror comedy, or what? Let me take a look at the genres.
Does nope. Not have comedy.
I don't know. I wouldn't think it was that funny.
Maybe I just have a twisted, dark sense of humor.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of like because there's such a, like you were saying, a cute older couple, and they're dealing with all this. I can see how it would kind of be a little giggly, but it gets serious.
I mean, for me, and I don't know how much of this I'll keep in there, but like the meeting of the Satanist cult is in a community center.
Yeah.
And the guy with the bad comb over, the way that they tested the soundproofing of the room, I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah, that's true. Yeah. You're right. A lot of it happens before the scary stuff starts happening. The way they read the script at the beginning, it's interesting. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the gore meter.
Was there gore galore, Grave Robber?
Yeah, there was some in there. There wasn't anything super gory.
There was a lot of blood, but there wasn't a lot of grisly stuff.
Yeah, like super offensive gore, yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty violent movie with a couple of things that keep happening.
Yeah, but not super gory, eh? What do you think, like a 3.5 out of 10?
It's definitely sub 5.
Yeah,
there you go. 4 out of 10. Hey, there you go. We all agreed. That's nice of us. And now it's the hoots and such. Well, I tell you what, when that scene with the gynecologist there, 0 out of 10 for hoots and such. Was there any hoots and such? 0. 0 out of 10.
Yep, there was nothing there.
Wasn't not that crazy?
Spoiler.
Yeah, naked.
Well, you can't say that.
Which crazy?
Okay, then never mind.
But I couldn't tell.
So. The one that I couldn't see, the one that I was like, what the shit's going on? And then the credits started, and I said, what the f? I was so freaking pissed right the shit off. It's like, what the hell was that all about?
This is where I wish we weren't a spoiler-free podcast.
No, the best is going to be like, okay, we've just come back for a 20-minute argument about the ending.
I don't think there's any coming back from this argument.
Because none of us knew what the shit happened. And we had a huge argument about
it. Well, let's save that for the final thoughts about whether we thought the ending was ambiguous enough.
Hold on. I'm just checking the very end here. And that doesn't count as hoots and such. Jesus Christ.
All right. Let's Zero. Move into our final thoughts and ratings, everybody. I definitely saw more dark comedy in this than my co-host did. So maybe that will appeal to some of you out there. I thought it was quirky and definitely an original take on the exorcism subgenre, as this is a reverse exorcism with some very scary tortured souls and some very good character acting. I think the second half was not as strong as the first, though. The setup is great, but what ends up happening is not as strong. Especially with the ending, you're probably left thinking, what did I just watch? What exactly just happened? But it's certainly a concept that deserves to be seen because it is original and it's done really well. I was impressed that this movie was shot in the actual house of the screenwriter, which is hilarious that a screenwriter would be making this much money to live in a house like that, but it is Barrie, Ontario, so maybe that's not so bad. One thing I noticed, which, I don't know, I thought it was kind of neat, there's an elevator in the house. And
oh, that's right, yeah.
Right at the beginning, first 3 minutes of the movie, 5 minutes of the movie, when they bring the pregnant woman into the house and bring her into the elevator, doesn't it just sort of go against expectations that the elevator goes up and not down? Like, this is a movie where she's not being held in the basement and it's not like candles and shadows and everything. It's upstairs in a bedroom.
Yeah.
I thought that was a neat little twist on expectations, and I think the whole movie sort of does that. It twists on the expectations and challenges your opinions and loyalties, I guess, and sympathies. Maybe some of us more than others. Definitely worth a watch. It has its flaws, so I can't get too high on the ratings here, but I'm still going to come in at a 7.75. It's almost an 8.
Wow. Nice. Nice, Jay. I like that you're using the 0.75 system now, too.
Well, I think you guys have been very accurate. And I just had an upgrade to my scoring system, and I got more digits of precision, so there you go.
Do you know, it's important. You're right, it's important, because it's not quite a 7, not quite a 7.5, not quite an 8. So what would that be? A 7.75.
I think so I've got to go back and recalibrate all my scores so that they're redistributed. But anyway, that's math talking. Let's not talk about math. Yeah. Let's talk about your final thoughts and ratings there, Grave Robber Jeff.
Yeah, I can kind of echo what you said there, because the acting's pretty good, just the way how they're nonchalant about everything, and a bunch of crazy crap goes down, some unexpected stuff, some scary stuff. I kind of agree that some of the things that happened in the end didn't really satisfy me, I guess. And I think there's probably a couple of different ways they could have done it, but it was almost to me like they broke some rules in there, but I guess we can't talk about specifics. But it was definitely entertaining, and a different look at the world of a couple satanist people. How you say it? Satanist people? A couple of cult members, and seeing it from their point of view is kind of interesting. So I'll come in at a 7.1 out of 10.
Very precise. Nicely done. Right. Nicely done, Grave Robber Jeff. Slice and Dice and Dave, take us home.
Hello. So I said before I watched this, I'm going to read a little bit about it just so I know what the hell's going on. So I read from Shudder. It said, after losing their only grandson in a car accident, grief-stricken Audrey and Henry kidnap a pregnant woman. And I said, oh, that's saying too much. So I stopped right there. That's all I knew. And that's all you got to know. And I was pleasantly surprised, actually, because I didn't think it was going that way, the way it did. So I was happy. I gave it a 7 out of 10, which is pretty high, I thought.
You're coming in the lowest of all of us.
I know. Well, I mean, I'm sorry. But I did like it. I did enjoy it. And maybe at some point in my life, I'd watch it again. 7 out of 10 from Slice and Dice and Dave. Your pal, Slice and Dice and Dave.
Well, Grave Robber, we finally got to watch this one. As Shudder fans up here in Canada, it took its sweet time getting to us, but I think it was worth the wait. If any one of you out there in Watch Out Horror Land has an opinion on anything for Jackson, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with us at watchouthorror@gmail.com, or you can visit us at our website at www.watchouthorror.com, where you can find links to all our past episodes, as well as links to all our social media presences. This brings us to the end of another episode, so thank you very much for hanging out with us. We couldn't do it without you. So until next time, and there will be a next time, be safe, treat each other well, and go watch some more.
Glory holes.
Thank you for listening to Watch Out. The opinions you've just heard have been made by three guys from Canada. Please keep this in mind and enjoy responsibly.
So the theme this week was, what was it again?
Female directors. Women directors.
Oh, that's that right. Movie with a woman director, Jeffrey the Grave Robber.
Ah, right.